Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Josephine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Back to bullying. Who were you bullied by? Who picked
well,
on you?
It's a very, very long time ago. Yeah. It's in the early 50s. I was an only child and remained so all through primary school.
Okay.
So the nuns decided that I was a spoiled brat, and anything that went wrong, I was blamed for it. I was beaten, but with their strap, and all just constant stuff like that. If, no matter who did anything, I got the blame. Of course, the class thought that was brilliant.
How do you know? And by the way, I know you say it's a long time ago, but obviously it stuck with you,
which
is what we're learning.
It stuck with me because of what my dad did.
Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a sec. But why do you? How do you know that's the reason?
They always said, "Oh, you're an only child. You're a spoiled brat."
Well, show us.
I know, Joe, but I mean, it was the 50s. There was nobody in the school that was an only child.
Oh, hello.
If you think about it, almost everybody had a few children.
And but what were they saying? It's the job of your parents to bring more children into the world. They haven't brought more children. They only brought you into the world now, so therefore you're going to spoil the brat, so therefore we can whack you.
Yeah. But then one day she really went mad and she grabbed me and dragged me across the floor. And when she did, she gouged out my knee with the nail that was sticking up out of the floor.
No.
So I went home and my father took one look at that. And men didn't take a day off in those days because work.
I know, so important.
So he took a day off and he went to the school and he called a nun out into the hallway. And my poor mother was behind him, blessing herself 100 times, I think.
Okay.
And, well, she thought we were all going to go to hell any second now because of my father's actions. So we called the nun out and he called me out and he told the nun very emphatically, and he was a rather imposing man, let's put it that way. If you ever lay a finger on my daughter again, you will have me to deal with. Just because you're a frustrated effing L1, he told her. And she was very, very careful with me after that.
Well, that's that's some conversation to have with a nun back in the 1950s.
I know. That's the kind of person he was. And then he wouldn't send me to a non-secondary school. He sent me to Sandymount High.
And before your knee,
that was non-sectarian.
Your knee was ripped as you were dragged across the wooden floor and a protruding nail ripped into you. Before that, had she been violent towards you?
She wouldn't let me go to the toilet.
What?
And then I'd wet myself, and then she'd hit me for that. And, you're always going, no matter, you're not stupid, the child is smart, and you're going, it's not my fault that I've done any of these things. I guess she had a scapegoat in me. I think it's because of the way my dad treated it.
And just to go back to that incident that broke the... Well, it wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back.
It was the nail.
I presume the nail did some damage if your dad spotted it.
Oh, yeah, I had to. It was gouged. It was like about a 3-inch gouge in my knee. You know, it had dug out.
But surely that borders on assault. It is an assault.
They didn't in those days think of anything like that.
Yeah.
But my dad obviously wasn't going to let it pass. He would never have said, "Well, what did you do?" Because you, no matter what you would have done, that's not the kind of punishment you should have got. So yeah, but it settled it. That's for sure.
Did you ever find out what happened that nun subsequently?
No,
in life
no, I didn't.
Okay,
say because like I said, I moved on to. Yeah. I didn't go to the secondary school that was attached to the primary. Dad sent me to Sandymount High School, which was just new then, and that was non-sectarian and mixed. So that's where I was sent, so that I wouldn't have nuns to deal with anymore.
Stay with us, Josephine. Patrick in Whitehall in Dublin. Josephine is in West Cork. Patrick, the Christian brother that abused you, was he ever brought to book?
No.
Okay.
No.
And what happened to you, can you tell us?
Well, we were. I was belonged to the hurling team, and we were the church. We had a tin church there, and they were building a new church. So everyone was asked to collect newspapers, so they'd weigh it and get money for it. So I was up training in the Phoenix Park, and the teacher. He was a Christian Buller, but he then became a teacher, and he asked me, would I come back to the house, that he had so much paper.
Yeah.
So I could tie it on the bike, so I went back to his house and he locked me in and abused me.
Yeah. And what age were you then, Patrick?
I was 8 years of age.
Oh, mother of God.
Yeah. I remember sitting on the couch and he sort of sucked the face and my lips off me. And they were black and blue and sore.
Oh, my God.
And he had his thing out and he tried to get me on the floor. He was abusing me.
And did you ever reveal that to anybody, Patrick?
Well, what happened was he did it to a couple of lads, and they reported to the police. Mm-hmm. And then I was they came to interview me in my house in front of my mother and father. And to prove it, I had to go with them and my father in the squad car to show them the house where it happened. And when they pulled up outside the house, they nodded to one another. That's where he lived. He lived 50 yards from the Archbishop's Palace.
In Dublin. Was it Dublin?
In Dublin.
Yeah. And was he never charged?
No, he was never charged.
And what did the Gardaí say when you brought him to the house?
The Gardaí said that we will now press charges. And then my father rang up the parish priest and said, what's happening? And he said that he'd be in touch with the Archbishop, and the Archbishop said there's to be no scandal. So he was escorted by Sergeant O'Handan, which was, there was a cyclist called Shay O'Handan. His father was a sergeant. He escorted him to the airport, where he was put on a plane to Canada to carry on his good work.
Yeah. And who decided on that option?
You see, I got a detective to look into it, and he says that he went looking, first of all, for birth certificates. Everything that was belonged to the man was destroyed. His records were all destroyed. From the Archbishop had made sure that everything was destroyed.
Yeah.
But this detective was a fantastic man. He went and, first of all, found out where he lived. He lived in Clare. And he found out that his brother was a paedophile as well. And this Christian brother had been in Drimna Castle, and he interfered with 56 boys in Drimna Castle.
Did you ever hear what happened to him subsequently? When did he die? Or I presume, but that
yes,
day.
He died because when I heard where he was, I was going to go over, but he says they rang me then. This detective rang me and said that he had died in 1998. But he was married with two children.
Right.
And he worked for United Airways.
Okay. Right. And did you ever manage to get to bring it any further, so to speak, Patrick?
I did, yeah. Well, I went down to there was times, Joe, I took the drink. I was a binge drinker. I was drinking an awful lot. Mm-hmm. And one night I was down in McGovern's and Drumcondra. And I was ready to drive home when I drove up to the Bishop's Palace. The gates were open. So I drove in and I beat the door down. And a man came out, and a big man came out, and he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking for the Archbishop. And he says, well, he's asleep. So I said, you better waken him up. He says, no, I'm getting the guards here. So I got into my car because I had drink on me. But I couldn't get out because they locked the gates, the main gates. So I couldn't get out. I had to sleep in my car all night and get out the next morning. But I took it further then.
Yeah.
And then I wrote to the Archbishop, and then I was interviewed but in the parlour. And if you go into the parlour of the Archbishop, you'll see a picture of Archbishop McQuaid. It's 8 foot wide and 10 foot long. That's what it is. And the priest that interviewed me was a special man sent over from America. But fortnight later, he was arrested and brought back to America for child abuse.
Yeah. They're shocking stories, they really are. Shocking
so
stories.
There was other boys, he interviewed with, he interviewed with at least six boys in the class, and he was terrible. When you were up at the board, if you went down back towards the class, he'd go at you like a dog. He'd grab you around the waist and...
I like dogs mating, that's what you mean.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, you poor... And did you... Well, how are you now? That's the best way of asking.
Well, I'm only 8 weeks after a stroke, but I've had it all my life. I've been an alcoholic, but I'm 25 years dry, and I'm a compulsive gambler, but I'm 4 years away from that. But it destroys your life, Joe. You just look at that girl the other day. Every day you turn on the television, she was adopted, and a man who got 12 years, but he destroyed her life. Makes no difference after 12 years, he'll get out. Yeah. Her life is destroyed. Destroys your life, Joe.
And when you
it's
say
the cover-up, is that's what's Joseph terrible. It's all the cover-up. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, I think is unbelievable, that an innocent child, because I also asked my father, because he was in Shell, and he used to go into our teen boys' school doing deliveries. And I asked him when I was an adult if he ever saw anything. Mm. And he said, yes. And I said, would you have done anything about it? He said, no, not in the 50s. He said, I was only a driver and I would have been sacked and my word wouldn't have been taken.
Yeah.
And this goes back to the same thing of covering up everything like this.
Yeah.
Okay, Patrick, you had a stroke, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago?
Yeah, but I was lucky they got me there. Within 20 minutes, so I'm full, everything back, bar my speech, and is a little bit queer.
What do you mean they got you within 10, 20 minutes?
Well,
what?
Once you get there quick,
yeah,
there's a great man there, Dr. McCarthy, and his team, and they got the tablets. And that night I was there, eight came in after me with strokes.
And did the people around you realise you were having a stroke?
No, I did it myself. I realised myself.
Good man.
I couldn't turn the page, the newspaper, and my left side went on me, and my mouth dropped and the whole lot.
And what did you ring the ambulance yourself?
No, my daughter rang the ambulance.
Right, you said
I think I'm having a stroke. So they got me there within 20 minutes.
Okay, that's fantastic. I hope you made. Well,
I'd like to pay a compliment to the nurses and the doctors, the unbelievable nurses that work there like 12-hour shifts. I don't think people really appreciate. I've nothing but the best to say about the HSC.
And what hospital was that, Patrick?
Tala, County Tala.
You can't say.
The man there was bad with a stroke, and he said to me, "Where am I?" I said, "You're in County Tala University Hospital."
That's true, yeah. Okay, Patrick, full recovery, hopefully. And Josephine, thanks indeed for both your stories. 51551 Joe, back to bullying. Eamon, you say you have a solution to bullying. Tell us your story, please.
Hello, Joe. Nice talking to you.
Guys, yeah.
Joe, just before I start, I just want to thank everyone, because I was on your show, I think it was about 2.5, maybe 3 years ago. I was becoming homeless. And the lady took me in, and there was people coming from Australia. I was going to have to leave, but with the circumstances now, I don't have to leave at all. So I just wanted to congratulate everyone that phoned in and helped me out.
Okay.
Now,
the bullying. The bullying. That's appreciated, your kind words.
I used to be a bully years ago, and I was only... thinking there the other day, like that. I heard about the schools, they can't do this and they can't do that. If they'd done a reconstruction or an event that after the bullying and the kids see this and reenact what happens after children are being bullied.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask, you know, the way they do plays around Christmas time and all like that.
Yeah.
If you could come up with some sort of enact people that act or something like that and get into the schools and reenact the actual event that went.
And the horror that comes along. But what happened in your own case, Eamon?
Well, my own case was it was just after school and I was there. I had the usual, had mates around me and all like that. And I thought I was a big boy having eight mates around me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I used to pick on this fella. He used to call him Squarehead. He was a chap that went to my school, you know. And I used to always say, oh, there's a guy with Squarehead and all like that. Okay. And this went on for months.
So you felt you were bullying him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, it's not to the extreme that kids go to today. It was like a sort of slagging them. But to me, it's still bullying. So the chap came along to me after a couple of months, and he said to me, he's look at him and says, I don't like you calling me Squarehead. I says, what's the reason for that? I just like the name Squarehead, you know, so I'll just keep calling it Squarehead. But he said, look, is there anything we can do about this? I said, yeah, I'll just keep calling you Squarehead. So he said, well, I'll have to do something about it, you know. So I said, what do you want to do about it? He says, up in the field, we used to be drinking up on a certain part of the field in Ballymun. And he says, up at the top of the field there, he says, I'll meet you up there tomorrow and on your own, and we'll sort it out. And I said, yeah, okay, no problem. Because I went up and I met him, because I had the eight lads with me. So I was a big guy going up. And he said to me, he said, are you going to give up calling me Squarehead? And I said, no. He said, well, I'm going to have to sort you out. But I said, go ahead. So he hit me a smack, and I went down.
Yeah.
And he came along to me and says, please don't get up. So I got up, and I went to go for him again, and he gave me another smack, and I went down. Now, this happened about five or six times. One of my friends actually put a stone in my hand and closed my hand. He said, that'll make your fist much stronger. But sure, I couldn't get near the chap. The chap done boxing. And he, every time, he just hit me one punch and I went down. And he said, stay down, please, please. He was begging me not to get up.
And you kept bouncing back up again.
Yeah, every time I get up, he give me a smack.
And after how many smacks did you decide to stay down, Eamon?
Well, it was about five or six, right?
Did you ever bully him again?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. We went off. I had my tail between my legs. I was crying and all like that. So we went off. And a couple of weeks later, he came along and approached me again. And he shook my hands. Mm. And he said, look, I'm terrible sorry, he said, but I just had to keep teach you a lesson. And we got talking and we became great friends, best of friends then after that.
Okay.
And it was a lesson that I learned in life. As I went through life, I respected people, and he done the best job ever by doing that to me. And I'll always appreciate what that chap. I didn't
I take your point. But Eamon, just after five smacks in the face from a boxer, surely you had some injury.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I did have. My whole face was red, and my lip was bleeding, and my nose was bleeding, you know. So I just went home to a mate's house, and he cleaned me up and all like that. So, like, I think my pride was more damaged than anything else.
Okay. Listen to Jer for a few minutes. Jer, good afternoon. You say you were a bully as well.
Yes, Joe, I was a bully, yes. Now, I totally disagree with that man there. Uh-huh. Violence doesn't solve the problem. You know, this is 2019. Uh-huh. I'll tell you my story really quickly. Now, before I start, I only joined your show halfway through, and my story pales into insignificance because of the man that I heard there earlier that was sexually abused.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of, you know, it it got
that.
Me.
Yeah,
but I was only listening halfway.
Yeah. Yeah,
anyway, I went to school in Cork, and it was primary school. So this bullying happened between the ages of 10 and 12. There was approximately 35 to 40 kids in class. There was one boy, and he had a stammer.
Right.
And this is difficult now, Joe. I've never spoken about this.
Yeah,
you
take your time and take
okay,
your breath.
Okay, all right. So,
and it was it was the boy with the stammer that you picked on, was it, Chair?
Well, I didn't pick on him. The entire class did. The entire class did.
The herd mentality, you know, as you call it.
And he would put up his hand, and us Gaeilge, I think, you know, I could be wrong, and my Irish is not great, Joe. Cadogan, Dunamock, Marsha, the Holly.
Good evening, so
that was the way you would ask to go to the toilet. And because he had a stammer, we would all laugh. And, you know, and the strange thing is that the leader of the pack was a very small but a very intelligent boy. He was the most intelligent boy in the class. He wasn't the biggest lad, but he would start it. And he would imitate the stammer. And then we'd all laugh. Eventually, this boy, which I will not name, stopped putting his hand up, Joe. Stopped putting his hand up. And...
Well, we know what that means.
He would urinate on the floor.
And when did you when did you realise this was wrong, what the class were doing to him, Jerry?
I knew it straight away, Joe. I knew it was wrong. But I was talking to your researcher, and I've been listening to your show for the last 2 weeks, you know. And I'm 50 years old now, and it seems to be prevalent, even though the media and the devices are different.
Yeah, of course.
The bullying is still the same, Joe. It's still the same. And
how
I was listening to your show just about 15 minutes ago, when this man was saying the covering up, and it's the pack mentality where the bully is covered up by the group.
Yeah.
And even in 1979, there was a bully, and if you were not part of the group, then you were out. So then, for some reason, children pick a victim. And if you're not part of that group, then you're out. So you have to pretend to laugh. And you have to pretend to be part of that group. And that's what I did.
Okay.
In 1978, 1979, 1980.
All right. And have you, how did that boy fare?
Well, I was saying to your researcher, lucky enough, I met him about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And I said his name, I met him, and I said, his name, and I said, I haven't seen you in 20 years. And I smiled, and I was waiting for him to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, how are you, Ger? How are you doing? And I said, I'm good, and what are you doing? And I was stunned that his stammer was gone.
Yeah. And it was...
We talked for about 5 minutes, Joe.
Yeah. And was the bullying...
And then I said, I said his name, and I said, look, you know, remember, the classroom, I said, look, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it's fine. It's fine, Joe. Don't worry.
Okay. And did that help you a little bit?
Big time.
Yeah, big time, okay.
Big time.
Okay, well, it's very good of you to say it in terms of, I know, that obviously, as we've remarked here in the last 2 weeks, the bully carries a burden as well. Now, it doesn't justify, but a bully carries a burden. And if that can be sorted out to everyone's satisfaction, well, that's a moving on point.
Yes, yeah.
That's a roundabout to come off. Okay, Chair. Thanks indeed. Chair, mind yourself.
Okay, Joe. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Chair. 51551. And Anne is on the line. Anne, you were beaten. I know, as you say, six decades ago, but your mother did something about it. What age were you when you were beaten?
Well, we moved. We moved from one part of Dublin to the other.
Yeah.
When I was five.
Okay.
And we started in this little school out in the middle of nowhere, a little primary school, and there's only about 12 children in the class. But the teacher, a lady, an oldish lady, took one look at me, and I don't know what I reminded her of, but she, it was hate at first sight, I'd say. Mm. But she used to beat the children, you know.
But hate at first sight to a child aged?
Looking back on it, yeah, five. I was a little blonde, and I don't know what it was about her, about me. But anyway, she took it out on me. The children all got beaten, you know, their knuckles, and you know, and she had this stick. She used to polish it and keep it behind the blackboard. But she took it out, I don't know how many times a day. But she actually lost control one day with me, and she beat me around the neck, the arms, everywhere. And my aunt was a fantastic knitter, and I had a little red cardigan that she'd knitted. So I ran out and up home. The house was about a quarter of a mile away, and my mother was down on the floor taking stuff out of a press, and I came in and I couldn't talk, you know, this awful gasping. And she knew immediately there was something dreadfully wrong, and she took the cardigan off me, and you could see the imprint of the knitting all over. So she got her coat on, took me with her, and walked down to the school and demanded. She knocked on the back door where the teacher was. My brother was in the same class, and asked for my brother. And the teacher, she knew immediately, and she was trying to say, "Oh, what's this about?" My mother said, "No, just give me my son." And she was more or less saying to my mother, "I didn't touch her." You know what I mean? The marks and everything were there. So anyway, my mother that night, she was a fantastic letter writer.
Okay.
She wrote to the Archbishop of Dublin, McQuaid, and we were in a little parish, and in those days you couldn't move a child to another school without permission.
Okay.
Right?
And what did your mother threaten to do?
She wrote to McQuaid and asked for permission to move us, and he wrote back and said, under no circumstances.
To move you where? To a Protestant school?
No, to the next little parish school.
Okay.
So anyway, he wrote back and he said, under no circumstances. So my mother wrote back to him and said, I obey your eminence. After all, it's a lovely little Protestant school at the end of the village. He then sent this emissary out to the house to give her permission to move us.
To the Protestant school?
No, to the next Catholic parish school.
But it was a threat of the Protestant school. And Anne, I bet you that letter is still up in the wonderful archives, kept so brilliantly up in Clonliffe College by the Dublin Diocese.
More than likely.
It'd be great to see it. Okay, Anne, I'm running because I'm way over time, and I've flowered to sell at Grafton Street. The Grafton Quarter. I'm way over time. Thanks indeed, Anne. A good ending to that story. Angus McInerney, producer. Ray Darcy is next.